Shalom, and thank you for listening to Progressively Jewish, the podcast where you can explore and connect to Judaism through a progressive Jewish lens. I'm Rabbi Richard Jacoby, and it's my pleasure to be introducing this week's episode for the weekly portion of Yitro, Exodus chapters 18, 19, and 20. Our episode explores the theme of the Jewish task, the way in which we are tasked with improving justice for all. To begin with, I had a conversation with my colleague, friend, and teacher, Rabbi Robin Ashworth-Stein, about her approach to the Jewish task of bringing justice to the world. Following that, you'll hear a three-way discussion in which Rabbi Janet Darley and Charlotte Fisher joined me to delve deeper into the story of Jethro and Moses, and to consider what social and economic justice means in 2021. Do listen on if you're concerned about misogyny, the treatment of refugees, or the treatment of other marginalized groups in society. Hello, Robin. It's lovely to be welcoming you to our Progressively Jewish podcast. And I wanted to ask you a couple of questions while we've got you for just a few minutes. The first is really what it was that initially moved you to set up Tselem as an organization, and how did you see that as part of, if you like, the Jewish task that you have?
Yeah, it's quite hard to distill into an answer that because there's so many factors at play. If I start with myself, as the Hillel quote goes, I think that my whole journey as a child into being an adult has been about finding my voice and finding power and enabling that in other people. And for me, growing up in my progressive synagogue, I understood that Judaism gave me a tool, a set of stories and commandments to enact all of that. I went off and became a human rights lawyer, and then decided to go back to my desire to be a rabbi. And when I started at Liebeck College as a student rabbi, it was then that I really wanted to bring those worlds together, to give us a system and a mode as leaders in the community to enact those Jewish values that we have, but to actually enact change in the world, that it isn't just a prophetic message, but actually it's, as Abraham Joshua Heschel said, praying with our feet, that actually we can enact our values through action. And it felt that there was a little bit of a gap, that there wasn't a system that would hold that to do it intentionally. So with lots of other rabbis and cantors in yourself, it was about crafting a space that would give us training, that would enable us to create real change in the world as Jews, proudly and loudly doing work that I believe we're commanded to, that's a sacred duty upon us all.
Thank you so much for that. And I think that's been the inspiration behind Tselem's formation. And as we come into 2021, how do you feel the level of need for Tselem and its voice and its influence compares now to when you first came up with the idea?
Yeah, it's kind of overwhelming, isn't it, to think about. And I don't know about you, but I certainly feel overwhelmed and pained by what I'm seeing in the world at the moment, the most vulnerable in our society. And I don't think we've yet really seen the ramifications of this year and the pandemic upon the most vulnerable in our society. It feels to me that the need for social and economic justice and equity has never been more needed. You know, we just need to be doing the work on issues around homelessness, on immigration, on poverty, on mental health. There are so many issues and systemic issues that need addressing. And I feel really passionately that it's us as citizens organizing ourselves that will create that change, that we have power as people together, working together intentionally and working in a strategic way of actually working out where is something where that will create real difference and that we can really make a change upon. It's a big task and it feels overwhelming, but this is why we have structures like Tselem, and so that we can really find a space to do that work, feel empowered with it, and walk alongside those people who are struggling, helping them to know that they have what they need to create change, and that we together walk alongside each other to go forward. So it feels like now is the time to really step up what we want to do and enact that vision.
And is that just about the clergy? What's the role beyond the ordained Jews, so to speak, into a wider Jewish community? And also, I guess, what is the unique contribution that you feel that we can make, we being both the clergy and the lay members of communities?
Yeah, so I think that as clergy, we're gifted through hard work and study titles that open particular doors, that have particular kudos and honour. So they enable us to have a voice in spaces that I wouldn't get before I became a rabbi, right? I'm just in spaces that I wasn't in before. And that gives us a particular space. I also really believe that clergy and leaders generally are stewards of the vision, that we're holders of the vision of the flame, the light of, like, you know, living our Jewish values and being beacons of social justice and acting upon it. But we're not the sole holders of it. And it's not that we should do the work, but it's about us really modeling that and bringing people with us. And then again, standing alongside them as we all do the work. So the idea of Tselem is to really train us up as clergy to understand how to do that work and then how to bring others forward so that we all work together in it. I think the idea is that it's not really just about the clergy, but if the leaders aren't investing themselves in that, we're not going to get anywhere. You know, it has to be the more people that feel empowered, excited by the vision, and, you know, understand the pain they're holding in the world that is broken. And the energy to move on that, that's where change will happen. So we can't rest with the clergy, but at the same time, we have to be the ones to say, here's the vision, here's what it is to be Jewish in this world, it always has been, let's do something together, and we can start to create a movement, hopefully. That's the plan, isn't it, over the next few years, that it just becomes embedded in what it is to be a British Jew, that it also is about enacting social and economic justice.
That's a wonderful call to action, call to act on our consciences as well. And let's hope we can put all our voices together and call others. And where, as it is often said, leaders are only leaders if they have followers, but also the followers themselves can be leaders. And I guess that's also one of the messages that we can take from this week's portion in terms of Jethro and his advice to Moses, and Moses and the distributed leadership that followed on from that conversation that father-in-law and son-in-law had. Mm-hmm. Is that roughly how you'd see it?
Yeah, absolutely. Brené Brown has this wonderful quotation about what leadership is, which is about seeing the potential in people and processes, that's what we do. And Jethro does that, doesn't he? Like, he says, Moses, open your eyes. In front of you are people who have what you need, who can lead, who have potential. Invest in them so that you can do your job better. So I think that has to be the message, doesn't it, about finding the potential around us and empowering them and walking alongside them. I'll keep saying it because I think it's really important. That's what our job is as leaders, rather than doing it all about ourselves. It's about us. We've got much more power if we're all together. And Jethro knew that early on.
That's great. Robin, thank you very much for the time. Lovely to see you and hear from you again. And we'll look forward to extending this further in months to come.
Lovely. Thanks, Richard.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to Janet Darley, one of my colleagues and friends, and Charlotte Fisher, a friend and a colleague in a different sense, as you don't carry ordination, but you bring lots of other skills to this discussion and knowledge, which is very welcome. Nice to have you both with us this morning. I want to begin by positioning us in Parshat Jethro, which is Exodus chapters 18, 19, and 20. And as a parasha that carries the name of someone who is not Jewish themselves, although some commentators treat the text as suggesting that Jethro converts to Judaism, It's a parasha that is actually very famous for containing the build-up to and the revelation of Torah at Mount Sinai. And so the most written about parts are those of the Ten Statements or the Ten Commandments. However, we are going to explore the first chapter of this portion in order to throw some insights out about a different aspect of the Jewish task in the world, which is how we help to bring about a more just society. In this chapter, Jethro watches Moses dispensing justice to the whole people from morning till night. He then advises Moses to share the workload by appointing others, trustworthy people who spurn ill-gotten gain, to act as judges or mediators for all except the most complex matters. Moses does heed this advice and sets up a system of distributed leadership, at which point Jethro leaves and returns home. So I guess my question for both of you, and perhaps you'll give a little personal background before you give your answer, is what's your take on this story and what's the secret of Jethro's success in influencing Moses to make a change? Charlotte, could I come to you first?
Absolutely. And as you say, I am not a rabbi. I am a community organizer. At the moment, I'm part of the senior management team at Citizens UK, and half of my work in that context is working with Jewish communities, which is that bit of work is spinning off to launch the Jewish Justice Center next year. And I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you for having me. And I particularly am grateful that we're having this conversation about Jethro, because for me, one of the things that this piece of text is really helpful in pointing out to us is a particular kind of model of leadership. And it's a model of leadership that measures you not by what you can do, but what you can build and support and unleash others to do. That leadership's test is, can you build with other people and unleash their talents and build a network, not just whether you as an individual can do impressive things. And I mean, you've hinted at, you know, in this question of what is it that allows Jethro to be able to do this? And I think actually, Jethro, this story is so helpful, particularly for people who are in leadership positions in Jewish communities, whether they are clergy or whether they are people that take on kind of overall responsibility as lay leaders, because it looks at really what are the habits of primary leaders. And when we talk in organizing about primary leaders, we talk about that as defined as people who think about the growth and development of another broader set of leaders. And Moses, I think, is someone that a lot of us can relate to. He has a lot of work on his plate. He has all these people coming to see him, and it can be overwhelming. And that our tendency in those moments can often be to focus on the task and not the people. But really, this parasha tells us a lot about what does it mean to behave as a leader who sees the test of their leadership as what they can build other people to be able to do, not just what they can do for themselves. So a couple of things I'd want to pick out are, Jethro doesn't start with the task. He treats people as whole, right? He starts by coming in this story, literally, to where people are. Jethro comes to Moses. He brings Moses' family to him. He connects Moses to himself. His first act is an act of listening. He is, as you say, as we understand, a Midianite high priest. And yet he says in this text, Baruch Adonai. He uses the specific name we use for God, not Baruch Elohim. He uses Moses' own particularistic language. He understands, secondly, that his job, the way he's going to be most effective as a leader of a congregation, is by building and picking and unleashing the talents of the right specific leaders. I mean, this is a key moment for the Israelites, but Jethro doesn't have, as far as we can tell in this text, any direct contact with the majority of the Israelites. He understands that his path is going to be through thinking about and building with other people who can build with it. He spends time building relationship. They spend time together before they do things that are important to them. They have a meal, they make a sacrifice. He listens and he shares stories back, right? The first thing we know about this story is that he hears from Moses. We're told twice in it about how Jethro hears the stories. He teaches Moses to really reflect back on himself. He expects people to fulfill their potential. He holds up the mirror and shows Moses what he can achieve and agitates him to be able to do it better. I mean, the Hebrew could not be clearer, right? It says a lot of, it is simple Hebrew. It is not good, but you can only do that if you are in relationship. And he teaches Moses how to build a network of leaders with intentionality, right? If you don't build a network of leaders with intentionality, we can become, I mean, not me, I'm not a rabbi, but you can become the most beloved rabbi who is knackered all the time because you are doing everything for people. And really one of the things that Jethro brings up in organizing, we call the iron rule, that you should not do for others what they can do for themselves, that it diminishes them and it exhausts you. And he really teaches Moses to think about the fact that actually at the end of this, he is going to have whole, brilliant, wonderful leaders. This is not just a series of people that are asking for tasks from him, but these are people who can do things for themselves, and that he has to build and model that and build it intentionally as a distributed network in order to be able to do so. So, that, I mean, those are just a few thoughts I have about what's so beautiful and powerful and what we can heed from this piece.
Thank you, Charlotte. It's a wonderful reading that comes directly out of the detail of the text, and you brought some lovely glimpses of the text itself. Of course, two Jews are always famous for having at least three opinions. And so, Janet, I'll be interested to see how your view on this text compares and contrasts with Charlotte's, but tell us your view.
Well, in this case, possibly you've got Jews who more or less have the same opinion. I'm a rabbi, but I also have spent a lot of time not only agitating, but in community organizing, having learned that just simply agitating didn't get you as far as actually organizing people and understanding how change is really best made. So I think I would pick up on something else that it was clear that Jethro did, was that he reached out to Moses in terms of Moses's own self-interest, because it was so clear to Jethro that Moses was exhausting himself. And so when you start talking to people, you want to reach them through their self-interest, because it's only by starting with what your concerns are as an individual and finding what those other people's concerns are, that you can actually then begin to build your picture, to get people to look, to start with themselves, but then think how their concerns might be like those of other people, and how putting those together, you can actually get a bigger picture. So it's not that similar. I think we both come from a lot of the same ground, same place.
Thank you, Janet. And I think that word that you use, self-interest, and the sense of how we can help people realize and appreciate their own enlightened self-interest and what is for their medium and long-term benefit, and then help them develop their potential is so much of what I'm hearing in both of you, which is wonderful, and we'll want to build on that. I guess one of the unique aspects of this is partly the interaction between someone who's non-Jewish, not Jewish themselves, with someone who is Jewish. And Charlotte, you picked up on very nicely, though, the use of Jewish language by Jethro, but also that the Jewish task, which is how we describe perhaps this section, this portion of Torah, doesn't just focus on in reach to the Jewish community. It very much focuses on impact on the wider world. And so we're looking at not just justice as being within the Jewish community and for the Jewish people in our dealings with each other, but justice for all. And so I wonder if, starting with Janet, you might talk a little bit about the work you're currently doing and what drives you forward under this term of justice?
I guess what drives me forward really is the sense that as I grow older, that I have less time to build the things to try to help bring about that world that I would like to see, and to see the sorts of communities tied together and working together that I would like to see. So I feel like I don't have any time to waste. So I try not to. And I guess I've still been working on a lot of things that I have been working on previously. We did do a lot of organizing in Safe Passage, trying to bring about an amendment to the immigration bill, which would have protected children's rights, unaccompanied minors' rights to reunite with the parents. Well, not just the parents, but with their larger family, because in fact, the problem is the way the law is currently written, it would allow them to reunite with their parents, but not wider members of the family. Unfortunately, we lost, but then you don't always win every battle, but that doesn't mean you just go away and give up. You just try to find another way through. And so at the moment, we're engaged in that, in figuring out where we go next and how we go next and who we go next with. But also, I've been active in working on transgender rights, working with people. I've become increasingly involved with the LGBTQ plus community. And so I've been working with people on that. And more recently, just to bring about something that kind of the economic, Richard reminded me that before I was a rabbi, I was an economist. The idea that people, first of all, if they're going to do anything or make any change, they have to survive. And one of the things been brought home to me with my activities with the LGBTQ plus community is that a lot of them are involved in the entertainment sector. And quite literally, they don't have work anymore. And this month, those who are self-employed not only don't have work, but they also don't have the grant that they were promised, because the fourth SEISS grant, even how you apply for it or what it's going to entail or how much it's going to be, isn't coming out until March, which is a bit ridiculous. The grant is supposed to cover February, March, April. So I've been trying to work with some other people to figure out how we could help people survive for the month of February. And so that's quite literally, you know, and I guess also these are people who themselves do a lot of fundraising and a lot of organizing and a lot of supporting of other people. So I want to make sure that they're still there at the end of it, so that the work that they are doing in their own communities continues to exist.
Thank you, Janet, and Kol HaKavod for all you're doing, and we wish you continued strength with that. Aware that this week is very much a focus on the forgotten pandemic of AIDS, and I think there's campaigns on that this week, as well as other aspects that you've been talking about. So we realise that the work is so wide, so much, but you are certainly doing your part. Charlotte, that original question for you as well, please.
Yeah, Kol HaKavod to Rabbi Janet. So I remember one of my teachers, Rabbi Jonah Pesner, taught me that Marshall Ganz, who's a professor at Harvard and a nice Jewish boy and a community organizer, and I think like me, also a rabbi's kid, is that he has this interpretation of this parasha that says the reason they talk about the chiefs of tens or fifties or hundreds of thousands is basically to flag that this different way of looking at community, that you could have 60,000, even if one in 10 people become a leader or judge, that you could have 60,000 talented and capable people who are now empowered and allowed to lead, and that it's a reframing of labor of, oh my gosh, so much to do, to power and leadership and responsibility, and oh my gosh, so many wonderful people to do it with. And I mean, exactly as you say, this text talks about relationship both outside and inside the Jewish community and the importance of that. And I think for me, relationship is really important, that just like, I mean, I think is hinted in what Rabbi Janet says, that a lot of my work is coded by loving people, caring for people, being angry with people, you know, thinking about what's actually going on for real people and their lives. And that's part of this work too, that, you know, what a joy. I'm thinking about, you know, the Cornel West quotation that I was one of the student rabbis at Leo Beck brought to class this week of justice is what love looks like in public. You know, justice is an extension of how we care for each other. And so at the moment, the things I'm working on, I mean, there's a couple of things, but big things are I lead the National Coordination for the Misogyny Hate Crime Campaign, which is kind of my dream intersectional feminist campaign, because there are Jewish, basically misogyny is something that there's no form of being a woman that means you don't experience it, but that lots of different forms of being a woman means you experience it differently. So Jewish women experience the intersection of anti-Semitism and misogyny. Visibly Muslim women experience often quite Islamophobic misogyny. Black women often experience racialized misogyny. Rabbi Janet just brought up the trans community, and trans women definitely experience both a combination of misogyny and transphobia. And the Law Commission came out in support of it. So we've now just got to pass it through to win it. But considering 4.5 years ago, people thought I was out of my mind for building this campaign, it is a beautiful thing to see move. And I built an anti-Semitism training course that is training all kinds of groups about what it looks like to build relationship with Jews, which I guess also is related to Yitro at oy-vey.co.uk, which I think is a very funny URL. And then I'm excited about a piece of work that you and I are going to work on later, which is around building a rabbinic fellowship for rabbis and cantors, a rabbinic and cantorial justice fellowship for rabbis and cantors, really thinking about building and training a generation of Jewish leaders to be able to engage in justice work in partnership with the brilliant Selem. So those are three of the things I'm working on at the moment, and I think probably all rooted in relationship in different ways.
Thank you. And again, kol hakavod to you. And kol hakavod is a phrase, for those who aren't familiar with it, means all the honor to you for what you are doing. But also, kol hakavod comes from the word kaved, which is about heaviness and strength. And so therefore, it's also saying continue to be, in that sense, heavy and strong, which I guess comes back to a song line and title, "He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother." And if we widen that to "He Ain't Heavy," or "He, She, They Ain't Heavy, They Are My Sibling," I think we're getting, you know, to the sort of drive that we all have in this. We are, of course, in the midst of a pandemic, and I think still unsure whether we are nearer the beginning or the end of the pandemic. We hope it's nearer the end, but we fear it could still be nearer the beginning. We don't know. And last summer, we were hearing when people thought perhaps that the pandemic might be fading away and coming to its conclusion, the slogan "Build Back Better" being used by some people. And I've very recently been struck by an alternative variant on that, and variants are the in thing at the moment this month, which is "Build Back Fairer." And the rigorous work that's being done on that by the Institute for Health Equity, led by Professor Sir Michael Marmot. And I just wanted to read a short section from the conclusions. "We suggest that to build back fairer, we need commitment at two levels. First is the commitment to social justice and putting equity of health and well-being at the heart of all policymaking, nationally, regionally, and locally. And then the second level," they say, "is to take specific actions that are needed to create healthier lives for all." And so I wanted, and I'm not suggesting that you have to be familiar intimately with the 200 plus page report that Michael Marmot issued, but bringing together your take on Jethro and Moses and those ideas that economic justice and social justice are interwoven with each other, how might you, the audience, how might we collectively go about influencing the leaders of our society to build back fairer? What thoughts do you have on that? Perhaps, Charlotte, I could come to you first.
I mean, you are more than welcome to come to me first. I'm very conscious that Rabbi Janet is twice doubly more qualified than me, in that she is not only a ordained rabbi, she is also a lecturer in economics. And so I will absolutely defer to her wisdom. I mean, in organizing, it is somewhat heresy to say what other campaigns should be doing. And I want to be very careful to not speak for Build Back Fairer. But what I would really hold is that I truly believe that every system that has been built to make our world fairer, whether that is the fight for suffrage, for women, for black people, for the fight that, I mean, you've mentioned around decriminalization of homosexuality, all of those things were rooted first in civil society. I mean, even the NHS, right, was originally rooted in civil society, came out of miners' experimentations in Wales before it was rolled out as a national policy. And so for me, my interest in these things are always, what does it look like, not just to be right, but to win? And what does that require? It requires large numbers of organized people. And Jethro provides us, in the ways we spoke about earlier, with all the ways of how do you start to build an organized network of people and how important that is to do. But for the specifics, I will very happily hand over to Rabbi Janet for more wisdom on this specific topic.
Thanks, Charlotte. That's a great answer in itself. Janet, you've been handed the
yes.
baton.
Well, I looked at this, and also I can't say that I'm an expert on Building Back Fairer, but I think the whole interconnectedness, and I'm looking at what you've put down here, the few phrases, the conclusion of this report. I guess the commitment to social justice and then the taking of specific actions and the whole idea of what you've asked, influencing leaders. I guess I take it back a step, which I think is where Charlotte was heading as well. It's not so much always about influencing leaders, but sometimes you could build the leaders. And having the structures there have already united people together, that have already brought people together, that have already helped people to understand where their own self-interest fits into a wider picture, a bigger issue. Because we know we can't, it's no good saying, let's build a fair society. You have to think, you have to break it down. It all has to be broken down. Helping people to understand where their particular bit of interest lies and how that fits into the bigger picture, I think, is important. Having those links that Charlotte was talking about between groups of people, and then not being afraid to take action, because sometimes the actions that we take are going to be maybe small p political, but sometimes maybe they should be p political. And I just like to use an example of what happened in the States, in Georgia, where two senators, new senators were sent to Congress. There had been a lot going on in the background, a lot of community organizing going on in Georgia. There's something really interesting about these two senators that I'm going to share with you. One of them, of course, which I think people know, is a reverend of the church that was Martin Luther King's church in Atlanta. The other one, Bushman, belongs to a synagogue called the Temple in Atlanta. And they know each other. They know each other because they have been brought together, because those two institutions have been working together since there was a rabbi there, Rabbi Rothschild, way back in the can't remember when he first got there, but like the 50s maybe, and started working within that synagogue, that Reform synagogue, to get those members in the middle of Atlanta, in the middle of Georgia, to talk to their Black neighbors, understand what they had in common with them, understand where they should be fighting together and working together. And that relationship continued to Martin Luther King and to his relationship with people and to the continued relationship. So the reverend, while he's preached quite a lot over in Temple. And Ossoff, the new Jewish member of Congress, well, he's been speaking over in the Black Church, really, on that as a member of Temple. So it's quite, I just think it's quite a fascinating story to see how not only have you used an existing relationship, which has been there for many years, which is one of the things that helped make Atlanta, there were a lot of talk during the Civil War and Civil Rights Movement during the 60s, that Atlanta was a city that was just too busy to fight, busy to hate, and because the underlying structures had been built, people knew each other, and they worked together. They've continued to work together. Now they've sent two excellent senators. So if you can't, if you're worried about leaders that you've got, you can always replace them with some new ones. They did just that. It was all based back to community organizing and back to small, specific actions that got bigger and bigger and bigger. So I think that's an interesting way to think about how you can go back fairer, because they will go on now to help, I think, make some fairer, some real changes in United States that will make it a fairer place.
Thank you. That's a fascinating case study. And again, also the idea that bringing out the vote and getting people registered to vote was so important, and the work that was done in Georgia to increase the number of people who were not only registered to vote but did vote. And that, I guess, also shows the importance of making better use of the democratic systems that we have in a country like ours is also the best way of keeping democracy healthy. And so you've given us some wonderful examples between both of you of not only what the big task is, but how we can break that task down and distribute the leadership out in the manner that Jethro encouraged Moses to do, so that the many hands and the many leaders make the work lighter for everyone and ultimately more successful. So in that spirit of community organizing, the Jewish task is summed up and the theme ends with a phrase from the Mishnah, Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor, v'lo ata ben chorin lehibatel mimina. And that translates as, it's not up to us, but nor is it possible for us to finish the work. And so we have to make sure we do our bit. And you two, thank you very much for both of you doing your bit and a lot more else besides. We really appreciate that. And we wish you strength in the ongoing work that you're doing. And thank you very much for your time here with me this morning.
Thank you for having us. And thank you both of you for being partners in the work as well.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure to be involved in this. And I guess that's something, that phrase always speaks to me, because I know what I'd like to see in the world. I definitely know that as I get older, that I'm not going to live to see all of that. Charlotte, I hope you will. I hope
I
your child will live in an even better, more brilliant world.
I mean, aren't we all on top of the mountain looking at the promised land and building it for the next generation? So what a lovely note to end on.
Indeed. Thank you both very much indeed.
My thanks on everyone's behalf go to my guests this week, Rabbis Robin Ashworth-Steen and Janik Dali, and Charlotte Fisher from Citizens UK. Our thanks also to Liberal Judaism, Reform Judaism, and Leah Beck College for supporting Progressively Jewish. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to Progressively Jewish and encourage your friends to do the same. If you'd like to be involved in a future episode or have ideas for what we might address, please tell us on the new Progressively Jewish Facebook page or by emailing us at progressivelyjewish@gmail.com. In next week's episode, we will be exploring individuality and when we might want or need to swim against the tide. as inspired by verses from Parshat Mishpatim,